Hi, I'm Ksenia.
And I'm Anna.
And you're listening to CareerZilla, a podcast about careers and technologies.
We talk to experts from different industries to uncover the latest trends and technologies that shape the future of work.
If you want to learn something exciting about the world around you or looking for a next career step, this podcast is for you.
And now let's start.
Hi, today we are talking to Eva Kaifenheim, who is a learning enthusiast, entrepreneur, and writer with over 300,000 readers. Hi, Eva. Could you please talk a little bit more? What are you doing?
Hi, Ksenia. Hi, Anna. So nice to be here as your guest. Sure. Like you said already, I'm a learning enthusiast. And by that, I mean that I deeply care about education and the way we learn. And my journey started in 2012 when I left my school and thought I just wasted so much of my time. So I set out to change the education system. I did a bachelor in business education, a master in strategy and innovation. And I also founded two businesses for learning and for habits. And then I joined Teach for Austria as a fellow because I realized studying doesn't necessarily lead to changing systems. And yeah, so I taught as a full-time teacher in schools for 2 years and saw how things are going in the system itself and how teachers struggle in the classroom sometimes. And since 2020, I'm self-employed. I'm mainly consulting learning and education projects, but also writing and growing my NGO for educational equality. And yes, the overall goal with all of these activities is to elevate love for learning and to help each other grow. And that's why I'm also so happy to be as a guest here on your podcast and share more about my experience so far.
Sounds really amazing. So you said that you've co-founded two startups in the area of education. Can you tell us more about them?
Sure. So in total, it were actually four. Always two because we stopped right behind the idea stage where we started to implement things. But yeah, I'd rather say they are projects. But they were all in the learning space. So one was for helping students, younger students, 15 to 18, find their way into the working world by focusing on their strength and potential, and we plan to create a Netflix for education, kind of what Masterclass is doing right now, except for Masterclass not deploying good strategies for retention and learning. So this was one project or startup, and the other one was called Focus, and it still exists. It's still an app in the App Store, and it helps people to change their habits in order to spend less time on their phone. And yeah, this app still exists, but with like so many other founding teams, I left at some point because I was still working full-time for Teach for Austria. And as you know, sleep is important. And some weeks full of like 60, 70 hours of work just led to, okay, I can't do this anymore. And then I decided to stop at some point, also because the vision of the app went into a different direction, affiliate marketing, which was not what I set out to do initially. But another, the app still exists and it's working pretty well, I guess. But the other startup or company I'm still working on and which still exists and also will exist in the future is SpeedUp Buddy. And that's a mentoring platform for first-gen students, which means if your parents didn't study, and you're the first one who goes to university, you can simply apply to get a mentor and who's some steps ahead of you and will help you to go successfully through your career path. So that's still there.
That's an amazing initiative. Does it exist only for Austria or it's more international platform?
So far, we are in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, and we have a little bit over 320 mentors right now all over the countries. And we're also planning to expand globally because it's not just a DACH region problem. But yeah, like one step at a time, and we're still at the product market fit stage where we are gathering feedback from the first users and improving the system behind it.
Yeah, nice. So you mentioned all this super interesting project and initiatives and your previous work experience. And overall, you have an extremely strong focus on education throughout your career. And you looked at the education and at the different problems in education from very different levels and from very different sides, both as an entrepreneur and as a person working basically with student when you was a fellow in Teach for Austria. What do you see as the biggest challenges of education today?
There are a lot of challenges. And I feel like the largest one is the talent inside the education sector. So because in Austria and Germany and also many other countries, the job as a teacher is medium well paid and doesn't offer a lot of perspectives. So a lot of wrong people apply for the job. There are many people who seek security, who want to have a basic and steady income, who want to be protected to not get fired. So there are many great teachers already, but not enough. So one big, big, big challenge is how to attract talent into teaching. And that's like the task of the government, yes, but also from the autonomy of schools themselves. So they could, and now we're already in the solution side, simply offer more career paths. And Singapore is doing an incredible job when it comes to attractive teaching models. So that's one part of the challenge. The other one is that, and yeah, it's been said too many times in the last year already, but digitization in education is still a problem. So when we talk about these edtech solutions, we still often forget that many students don't have access to devices or don't have a proper internet connection at home. And before we can talk about personalized education at scale and deploying all those models, we need to lay the proper infrastructure. So I guess these are the two main challenges right now.
Yeah, this is totally true. But also, since the topic of our discussion today is learning how to learn, what do you think about this part? Because I personally have an experience that when you start just at elementary school, people teach you how to read, how to write, how to follow certain instructions, etc. But no one ever focuses on the idea how to teach a very small child to learn, essentially. And learning is not such a trivial and easy process, and it requires a lot of efforts, both from the teacher side, but also, of course, from the student side. How do you see this aspect of teaching people to learn, essentially?
That's such an excellent question, and I love that you ask it. Like, the meta skill of learning, it's what will make students succeed in their future. Because if you know how to learn, you can basically master any skill. It's like the tool you really need to succeed in the world after finishing school. The only problem is that in schools, there are so many myths about learning and about how learning works. And I feel the evidence-based strategies and the evidence-based science still hasn't found entry in many schools and in much teaching. So yeah, how do you do it? Like, first of all, you explain how learning works. And that's basically not like a recording device. Only because we read something, we can't store it inside our head. Instead, we need to engage with the content. Like, remember things in context to our existing information inside of our head. So whenever we stumble upon something new, we need to link it to something that's already in our head. Like, knowledge doesn't exist like an island. It's only by connection that we can really remember what we learn. And then the second thing is that we need to strengthen this knowledge inside our head. So when you remember, I don't know, where did you go to school, Anna and Xenia?
I went to school in Siberia, pretty far from this
and
place.
I went in Ukraine.
Oh wow.
Not so far, but anyway.
Yeah. Siberia and Ukraine. And like, do you also remember like the chalk and the boards, and then somebody was talking and you were listening? You also have that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like the worst thing you can do in terms of learning, because passive listening, it's not engaging and it doesn't feel difficult for the learner. So learning is best when it's slow and when it's hard and when you don't present everything ready just to copy and paste into your own notebook, but if the learner has to do the problem solving itself. And it can be messy and it can feel like unorganized, but that's how learning works best. And then apart from that, we also always need retrieval, and we can use testing as a tool in order to access the knowledge we learned like a month ago. And spaced repetition is what actually helps us to really dive deep into the task. And then lastly, and that's like the last thing I feel is really, really missing in schools, is the fact that you self-direct your learning and engage in deliberate practice, because often you just get the curricula and the task and you're like, the students are rewarded who are the best at listening and fulfilling the requirements and fulfilling the rules, but it's not rewarded if you embark on your own learning journey. And so that's something that would really need to find entrance into schools and into education places.
So you mentioned the problem-based learning. So I experienced problem-based learning only in the university already. And I actually enjoyed it really much. At what age, let's say, children are already ready to perform these kind of the activities? When it is best to start with the problem-based learning?
In kindergarten, actually. Children learn so fast. So when you look at them, like the language and when they read and the way they perceive the world and make sense of everything around them, they are like natural learners. And what schools do right now is they make them lose the love of learning, not in every case, but in many cases. And so I think it's great to start in the beginning. However, the challenge, it requires a lot of resources. So first of all, teachers need to know how to do it. And then second of all, we need enough persons who can facilitate this learning process, because only if somebody works problem-based does not mean they don't need feedback or they don't need a person who supports them at some points and hints towards the right direction or shows a potential path they could take. So yeah, I feel the earlier the better, but I also understand that it's like you can't just expect the change to happen from one night to another.
You mentioned a very, very important point, that learning is an essential skill, and it is also the skill that defines our success, so in adult life, in professional life, in private life as well. How one could establish and develop learning abilities when a person is already adult and maybe he or she was unfortunate and didn't go to some really cool school or university? How one can ignite this spark of joy from learning?
Also a great question. So I guess the answer lies already in your question by asking questions to people all the time. Like if you don't understand something, just ask for it. And then I think the second big thing on how to find motivation and time for regular learning in our lives is to just follow our interest. Because curiosity usually leads us to the places where learning can happen in a very fun and exciting way. And so, for example, there was this famous sociologist from, I guess he's also from Germany, he's called Luhmann. And during his lifetime, he wrote 70 books and 500 scholarly articles. And when he was asked like how he learned so much and how he wrote so much and how he just organized his research, he answered that he never forced himself to do something he wasn't interested in. So if he encountered resistance or an opposing force, he didn't push against it, but he redirected that energy towards another productive goal. So when we translate that to our everyday life, I guess it sounds so trivial, but it's true. If we have the freedom to choose what we learn, it becomes way more engaging and interesting. And in terms of the first part of your question, like how can we learn how to learn if nobody taught us, there's this amazing course by Barbara Oakley. I'll send you the link after the episode. Maybe you can put it in the show notes. So it's called Learning How to Learn, and it's the most successful Coursera course. It's totally for free, so €0, $0. And you learn how our brains work and how learning works. And that's a great entry point. And if you have this basic knowledge and then maybe combine it with some other book or some other course within your niche, you can simply use those skills to develop your own learning habit. So there's no set path, and I'm not preaching the truth, but one can easily find out more about it. All you need is like access to the internet and curiosity.
Definitely.
I'm curious, do you have some resources you really like? Because you obviously you're like lifelong learners. You're interviewing so many interesting podcasting guests and into so many different topics, and you also completed your PhD. Do you have any resources you can recommend for learning how to learn?
Not really. I think at least in my case, it's more of the internal drive. let's put it so. But nothing comes to my mind. But maybe Ksenia has. She's much more developed in this self-improvement field.
Thank you for this compliment, if it can be taken as a compliment. No, I must say I was lucky enough simply to develop some strategy for learning very early on in my life. I have to say also no one ever taught me how to learn. However, I was also very lucky and privileged in a way that my mom was a high school teacher. And she kind of explained me how to structure the learning process at the very beginning when I was very young. She kind of explained me the value exactly of this repetition, that you should not try to swallow the whole book chapter, I don't know, and learn 20 different terms in biology immediately in 20 minutes, but rather you should go back to this chapter day by day, and then in 10 days you kind of have it already in your head, and it doesn't require so much effort as this horrible attempt to push everything in your brain in just in 20 minutes. And regarding resources, I like very much the book which called Ultra Learning. I believe the author is Scott Young, and this is a really good book where a person who basically tried many, many different techniques and approaches to learning simply systematically goes through all of them. And I think he by himself went through the whole MIT programming curriculum just in 1 year instead of four. He's a very avid lifelong learner. And he also kind of goes along the same path as you described. He talks about project-based learning. He talks about these approaches that you need to put your knowledge immediately in some actions. But yeah, I stop it because otherwise it's become interviewing Ksenia. I'm not ever.
Yeah, but it's true what you say. And Scott Young, when I read his book, I was so inspired because he not only taught himself Mandarin, but I think four languages within 1 year by living 3 months in each respective country and forcing himself to only speak that language. So yeah, he's a real ultra learner.
I would like to ask you about how one can find motivation and time for, like, as an adult, for regular learning in our current extremely busy lives.
So motivation, you mentioned already some good aspects, and I also agree that it's like interest that should be the guiding post. And then when it comes to time and our busy lives, I mean, it's up to us how busy we make our lives. And I guess the pandemic last year was a great reminder of how much is really necessary to feel happy and how many events and kind of trips you need in order to live a life you generally enjoy. And I feel in terms of making time, often doing less is the answer. And since I'm self-employed, there's this like imagination in a lot of people's head that if you work for yourself, you're working all the time and 24/7. But I just organize my life that it's not busy. I read every morning for like maybe 1 or 2 hours. I write every morning, and I just say no a lot. And by protecting my time and like structuring my days in a way that prioritizes learning and learning about new things, it helps me to enjoy every day. And I know I'm really blessed by being so independent and not having to follow any strict work schedule. But at least in our like circle of in our network, in our social circle, it's okay to set boundaries and also make tough career decisions. If you feel like you're too busy and you need more time, then do what it takes to get more time and do the things you really love. And yeah, I feel our life is too short to just follow a given path and live up to other people's expectations. What's most important is, yeah, make time for yourself and for the things you're interested in.
Could you please talk a little bit more about your rules of informational hygiene, so to say? On the one hand, of course, there are some strict rules which one need to follow sometimes at workplace. However, we are often distracted simply by news, by internet, by some social media. How do you avoid this situation?
Yes, so again, like what works for me doesn't mean it must work for you. And my career path doesn't mean that everyone else should have a similar one. So everyone can make his or her own decisions. But when it comes to information hygiene, I think there are some basic rules or principles that can really help spend less time on the phone and in the information overflow. And one thing that helped me, ironically, was a book. It was a book called Deep Work by Kyle Newport. And in the book, he describes how focus and abandoning almost every distraction helped him to write and to enjoy the time with his family more and with his friends. And so what I did after reading the book are two things. So first of all, I bought a physical alarm clock and I charged my phone outside of my bedroom. And so from now on, or since I think it's three years already, like my alarm clock wakes me and I leave my phone switched off until 11 a.m. So every morning is a phone-free, information-free morning. And I also told you, Senja, I think I mentioned it in the workshop, that my LinkedIn password and my Facebook password, they are physically locked away. Like I can only access social platforms if I ask my partner on the weekend to have those passwords. And this might sound ridiculous, but it helps me so much, because no site blocker or no time constraints app helped me. I always ended up reading some news or browsing some sites, and like putting very strict limits to the way I spend time on social media and also the news helped me to have more time for the things I really enjoy.
That's a very interesting approach. My God, I'm not that brave. I'm not that brave to try it out, but
yeah. But I mean, not everybody person needs it. Like I was a social media addict before. Like I couldn't write for 20 undistracted minutes, and so I needed some radical solution, and it works for me. But it doesn't mean that it's the best way for somebody else.
About actually writing, that's my lifelong dream. So we know that you are a writer for Medium since relatively recently. How did you got interested in writing, and what's your tips on becoming a successful writer?
Mm-hmm. So as you know, probably Medium is like YouTube, but for texts and for journalism. So everyone can write there and you get paid based on the people that are reading your texts and for how long they are reading your texts. And I started in March last year, so it's been almost a year. And yeah, I had no clue about writing before, but I saved some money to invest in myself. So I got myself as a writing coach and took some online courses. And yeah, what can I say? What helps? So the most important thing is to start. If you say you want to write one day, then write today. The best way. And it's tough to publish and to hit publish the first 2, 3, 4, 5 times, because you feel like you're giving away your soul and you become vulnerable and what will people think and so on. But once you just do it, you feel okay, it's totally fine. And there are a lot of interesting opportunities emerging out of the writing. And as with every new skill you learn, once you're on the journey and in the process, you realize what you don't know. So in the beginning, I thought, okay, writing is just about sitting down and write. But only later I realized, wow, it's about headline optimization. It's about writing proper introductions. It's about writing good subheadings. It's about applying for publication. It's about connecting with other writers to work on your sentence structure and to get a creative workflow that helps you put your ideas into proper words and do so consistently at a high quality. So if I had to give one piece of advice, I would just say start writing and aim for really publishing 3, 4, 5 pieces and articles within a specific time frame. And then while writing, you will realize what you don't know and find out what other skills you need in order to become a better writer.
That sounds really very inspirational. But how do you generate so many creative ideas every day? Because you need it for your writing, you need it for your businesses. Do you have some special system for it?
Yes, I love systems. So contrary to what a lot of people think, creativity works best when you have routines and structure. And what I do, like every time I have an idea, I write it down either in my notebook or if I'm sitting at my computer, I'll just capture it in some note-taking app. And then I have like an input-output flow. So everything I consume, it will go into an app called Readwise, and Readwise will export all of my notes from articles, from books, from podcasts, from other Medium articles, from YouTube videos into one note software. It used to be Notion for me, but some weeks ago I switched to Rome Research. And from there, I use Tiago Fortes. He built like the Second Brain course. And I use his system of progressive summarization where I take some literature notes. And then I follow the Zettelkasten and transfer those literature notes into permanent notes. And then ultimately, when I start writing an article, there is my idea board with all the ideas I wrote down. And there are so many, I can never write all of them. But it's just a matter of finding related ideas and connecting them with each other. And from that on, I have my first draft. And then it goes into the cycle of second draft and then publishing. But yeah, basically, it's just having one place where all of your input and all of your notes and ideas flow together. And it can be Notion, it can be OneNote, it can be any bullet journal note-taking app, as long as you feel happy with the system you use.
Okay, that sounds really interesting, but we definitely need a visualization of this workflow.
I could talk like for one entire hour about this kind of workflow. It's super simple, but to understand it, you need some basic understanding about the different steps. And there are a lot of great articles on it. Like if you Google how to build your second brain or Zettelkasten method and Rome Research or Rome Custom, you find like expansive tutorials on how to do it.
Speaking of systems, what would be your tips on organizing, on setting the goals? Short-term, long-term, professional, educational?
Mm-hmm. So this is also a personal question, but I love to have my daily goals and routines related to my bigger goals. So like, first of all, it's really important to know where do you intend to go with your life? Like not only professionally, but also on the level of relationships, health, wealth, purpose. Like if you think really long term, where do you see yourself, or which kind of person or lifestyle do you admire? And there's this powerful exercise, and Xenia did it with me in a workshop, and it's called Big Five for Life. It's also a book, and they have this powerful metaphor where you walk through your museum of life on the day you die. And in this museum, there are a lot of pictures that simply portray the way you lived your life. So if you spend 40 hours every week in front of your computer screen working, you'll see yourself on the picture in front of the computer screen working. So it's not something you would love to see, but rather portraying the reality. And think about this museum, now we are still young, what would you love to see? Like what would be your ideal life look like and something you look back to when you're lying in your deathbed? and backward planning, really, really have to come up with like your deepest dreams and your deepest wishes. And so once you know those, you can start to plan your year, your next 2 years, and then from that on plan your month and then your week and then your day. So I think it's really important to start with a big picture in mind and then always align how you spend your days with how you want to spend your life, because that's your life in the end. Like every single day adds up to your total life. So yeah, regarding the question, like how do you define long-term goals? Just start at some point. They are dynamic. They will always change. They don't have to be perfect in the first place. But to have a rough idea really helps to feel as if you are moving towards them instead of just having them as a dream that will never happen.
I have to add that this exercise, Big Five for Life, really drives you in some level of existential crisis, I must say. At least, I mean, it was really eye-opening experience. I have to say, you're really right. Then you really think, what do you want to have and whether it's really aligned with what you're doing every day. But I really, it's just a disclaimer for our listeners.
But tell me more about it. Like, how is, I'm interested. How did it drive you into an existential crisis? If you want to share a little bit about it.
No, I think it's kind of partially a joke, but partially it's not, because I think that we all have this kind of illusion that we have all time in the world, and we really need either to step out of our daily routine and think about the life as a whole concept, or something happens sometimes, right? Usually it's something very unpleasant, like death or disease, and then you think, okay, how many days do I have left in total, how many years, and what do I want still to do and to accomplish, and how I would want to see myself. So yeah, I just mean that there are people who maybe think about it every day, and there are people who do not think about it because they are immersed in the routine. And yeah, I think for a second group of people, that's a really eye-opening experience.
Yeah, well said.
I would like probably to bring our conversation to some final, since fortunately we have some restrictions on time. What would you overall advise to young people who are very much interested in education, who are very enthusiastic about this field, who really want to change it for better? Because I really agree with you, changing education means also changing the future of the world. And maybe these people feel a bit desperate and lost, particularly now in the pandemic world. What would you advise them?
If they are interested in education, they should just reach out to me on LinkedIn. Like, my name is there, Eva Kaifenheim, and simply ask like what's on their mind, because I feel what helped me most, and what I think also helps younger people in the beginning of their career the most, is learning about all the options there are, because there are so many unknown unknowns, which means you don't know that you don't know about it. And talking to somebody who's at least partially gone the path you intend to walk can really help you see what's out there and what you can do, and open your mind towards all the different ways you can simply pick. So yeah, first of all, reach out. It doesn't have to be my name or your name, but simply to a person that you feel is in the area you're interested in. And then secondly, read. Seriously, just read. And if you only read 20 minutes every day, you're reading more than almost any person. And reading simply expands your mind, and it helps you not only live a happy mind, have a happy mind and live a happy, healthy life, but it also shows you all the different things you can do in your life. And so it's, I feel like talking to people and reading is the best thing you can do if you feel lost right now, because there's no reason to be lost, even though it's the pandemic, because so many new opportunities emerge right now. And even though change is always scary, and I know people are so fed up with the situation right now, which I also can understand, like, there will be more opportunities afterwards than before. So I feel it's okay to look neutral or a bit optimistic into the future.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. It was really an inspirational conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
If you are interested to learn more about career transition, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can find links in the podcast description. There you can find also all books, YouTube channels, and any other information which our guests shared with you.
If you haven't mind some friends with exciting career transformation stories, please let us know. We are always looking for new guests.
Don't forget to hit a subscribe button and tell your friends about our podcast if you find it helpful.
Stay tuned!